Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 mg dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 mg dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
On News Talk.
The war in Russia, the cost of living crisis and the return to normal after the pandemic have all contributed to a heightened focus on our energy consumption. Now, to talk about where we source our electricity, its future distribution and its management, I'm joined by the Chief Executive of Airgrid, Mark Foley. Mark, good morning and welcome.
Great pleasure to be here, Pat.
Now, this is looking ahead. We have, if you like, an immediate crisis which may unfold this winter, but you're trying to get ahead of that crisis and the crisis for the coming decade.
So we published this morning, Pat, what's called a generation capacity statement, and it does three things. Firstly, it sets out our expectation for growth in electricity demand over the next 10 years. So it's a deep look into what's going to happen in terms of electricity growth. And we do that by looking back. We do that by interrogating our customers. We look at economic growth. We look at things like the Climate Action Plan and what the Climate Action Plan is going to bring, etc. The other part of that equation is, do we have enough generation? So we look at the current generation fleet and we forecast, you know, the health of that, when it's going to be on or off the system going into the future. And then the third part of the equation is there a gap? And this was the essential message coming out of today's generation capacity statement is number one, we're going to continue to have strong growth in demand for electricity, which is no bad thing. It's predicated on good economic growth, the electricity transition, and indeed the digital economy. But we're very tight on generation.
Okay. Now, were you ambushed by that tightness? Because I know we were reporting before on people who promised to deliver generation capacity and then failed to do so.
Yeah, I think I'd make two points there, Pat. For a number of years, we've been signalling the need for generation capacity for two reasons. One is to support growth. Secondly, is to support the energy transition. Sorry, three reasons. And the third reason is to see off the old fossils. So there's three dimensions to why we need new gas generation. And yes, we've had the disappointment in the last 24 months of plant that had won capacity auctions not showing up, essentially. They've terminated their contracts, or their contracts were terminated by the
regulator. Were there any penalties on those?
There were penalties. Significant financial penalties did accrue, but that's little comfort to us.
And what did they do? They went somewhere where they could get better money?
No, I think, I mean, it's quite complex. You'd have to ask individual developers why they made the decisions they made, but clearly they didn't feel they had an investable proposition. Otherwise, they would have proceeded.
But they bid for these contracts.
They did.
They won the contracts on price and quantity and so on.
Indeed.
And then they pull out. Now, to what extent is the green noise that's being made kind of frightening them, you know, frightening the horses, and they think, my God, I build this multi-million pound plant and it may not be used. If Eamon Ryan has his way, it'll be 100% wind and I'll be out of business.
I think, look, a major policy state position was made, you know, 18 months ago where the minister himself, the regulators, based on some work we had done, was to make a very clear statement to the market that this market needs about 2,000 megawatts of dispatchable gas generation to see us through the energy transition beyond 2030 and into the next decade. So the clear policy signal has been enunciated. Investors are seeing that. Ireland's a positive place to do business, etc. But the incentives and the regulatory model to make sure that those investments are made needs to be strengthened. We've made that point to government. We've made that point to regulators.
So you're saying that they weren't frightened off by the green agenda, if you like, that they were kind of given a guarantee that for the next decade, we'll need 2,000 megawatts of gas-fired
Some of these
generation.
Projects preceded that policy, affirmative policy statement, one would have to say, Pat, to be honest.
So the decisions to pull out preceded that policy statement, which was a bit late, in other words.
Possibly. I mean, I think There's complexities associated with each project. I can't comment on what a developer's decision-making sure. process, what their board had decided, but clearly they decided this was not a proposition that could remunerate them, and they pulled.
Isn't it in parallel with Shell deciding to pull out of offshore wind generation because they say it's too bloody complex here? Too, you know, the planning is slow, the rules are not clear, we don't know where we stand, we can make more money, we can have certainty elsewhere. Is that kind of an overarching problem that we have in this country?
I honestly can't comment on the Shell thing. I'm genuinely surprised myself because they only came in 12 months ago. Positive things have happened since Shell came in because we've had the Maritime Planning Act has gone into place. So now there is a very clear legislative proposition to consent an offshore wind farm.
But you're still dealing with onboard planola, which is already not fit for purpose for dry land building. We know they're trying to reform it. And they were charged with, multi-billion euro investment decisions on offshore wind. Didn't make sense. I would be scared if I was Shell.
Well, there's a lot of developers very much in play on the east coast of Ireland. There's at least seven projects, very, very big, big ticket companies, big balance sheets, very committed. They've spent tens of millions and very much proceeding with the projects under the current legislation till the new Maritime Planning Authority is put in place. So, you're always going to see actors leave the stage, but I'm very, very confident that the calibre of players in the Irish Sea have been around a long time. They've invested a lot of money, and a high proportion of those, in my view, are coming and want connections from Airgrid and want to connect onto the Irish system.
Now, back in the day, there was the ESB, and that was it. And the ESB generated the power, sold it to customers, be they commercial or domestic, and they ran the grid. And then there was this division, and now we've a lot of retailers and a number of wholesalers in the electricity market. Your situation in Airgrid, are you at the mercy of these suppliers? Because it seems to be the case. Like, you can say, we need more generation capacity. You can bring the horse to water, but you can't get the horse to drink.
Well, look, I think there's two dimensions. There's the renewables, which is managed out of the department where the Barton both enunciate policy and they also set the framework for auctions for renewables. And then the regulator manages the frameworks for conventional generation. Look, I think, Pat, look at our success. Up to 2020, Ireland delivered 5,000 megawatts of onshore wind. Completely transformed the power system. 40% of all of our renewables all of our electricity is coming from renewable sources. So we've done a lot of good things.
I don't doubt
it at all.
We've
got ourselves caught in a bit of a pinch at the moment where the gas generation didn't show up, and we've got a near-term, acute crisis because we're short of megawatts.
My point really is you guys can't build the generation yourselves.
No, we recommend. The generation capacity is critical because it sends that clear, unambiguous signal. What's the demand looking like? And we're very good at forecasting demand, and our record's very strong. What generation's available? What's the gap? And that gap should be the basis for regulators and others to run the necessary auctions to get the right capacity on.
So whether
system.
We need LNG terminals or not, that's not your province. You would presumably like a reliable source of gas.
We would.
With the Russians.
And the right technology, low carbon technology. And we've been very clear in terms of what we call a balanced portfolio of appropriate gas technology that backstops renewables and gives us the security that we need. We've been very clear, and we set that out for government and regulators.
You're not entirely dependent on what happens on the island. You are connected.
Correct.
To whom are you connected, and do they have spare?
So we're connected to the United Kingdom through the Moyle Interconnector from Northern Ireland to Scotland, and the East-West Interconnector, which is owned by Airgrid, which is East-West. And part of our challenge coming into this winter, frankly, Pat, is the fact that when we experience what I call the crunch, which is maybe high demand, no wind, maybe difficulties in terms of some of the old fossil plant, the UK is likely to experience similar climatic conditions.
Yeah. So when it's becalmed here, it's becalmed
exactly.
There.
And so we could be faced with a situation where the interconnector is not, the UK can't bail us out.
They were exporting to France during the summer because a lot of French nuclear plant was down because for servicing or whatever.
Yeah.
Presumably that's all back up and running because France needs energy like anybody else.
Yeah.
What about the nuclear availability from the UK? The one thing about nuclear plants, once they're going and they produce a hell of a lot of power.
The UK is producing what they're calling their winter outlook this week, National Grid, and we're expecting them to have very similar thesis to ourselves, which is general concerns going into the winter of tightness in terms of the supply-demand relationship. So we have to be careful not to over depend on the UK coming into this winter, because they're likely to have a similar problem to ourselves.
Okay, so you're looking at the gap and you point out the gap, but as I say, you can't bring the horse and make a drink at the. You need players to come in. What do we need to incentivize the players to come in and provide the generation capacity that you need to be guaranteed as we make this transition to electricity?
Well, on the renewables front, there's very clear plans in terms of planned auctions for both onshore wind, offshore wind and solar, and that is going essentially to plan. On the conventional generation side, we need to strengthen the signals to the market to assure those investors. We're not short of money, Pat. There's plenty cash out there. The issue is giving reasonable certainty to developers to invest their cash in projects in the Irish marketplace so that they know they can get a return on their investment. That's about the money you pay them and the time, the longevity of the contract. All those matters need to be looked at.
A lot of things have to happen. For example, if we get this massive resource of offshore wind off the Atlantic coast, we've got to do something with it, because when the wind is blowing fiercely here, it's probably blowing fiercely in the UK as well. They may not need that wind power resource, so we have to either move it on further into Central Europe, or else we have to turn it into hydrogen or some other way. I mean, there was a great idea years ago, but I don't think it stood up to engineering scrutiny at the Spirit of Ireland project.
That's right. I know that project very well, actually.
Which was going to pump water, basically.
Seawater into a valley in Donegal.
A huge valley. And then when we needed the power, it could evacuate through the turbines. Whether that was ever practical, I don't know. The losses might have been too acute. But if you're getting free energy, it just might make sense. Like, once you've built the plant, wind is free.
I think separate offshore into two dimensions. One is 2030. The 2030 imperative is to transform the power system. In your opening quotation from me, transform the power system so that we can we can essentially have 70 to 80% of our electricity from renewable sources. That offshore wind is going to come from the East Coast. They're proven projects, it's proven technology, it's staggering technology. It'll deliver great price points. They're good developers, and a lot of those projects will get over the line. We will connect them and they'll get into the Irish system. Ireland Inc. then needs to have a look at this extraordinary resource off the west coast of Ireland, which is more than we'll ever need as a country. We need to go about looking at a vision for that opportunity, because this could change this country, not just for the next 10 years, for the next 100 years.
This is our oil.
This is our oil, Pat. And I think a body of work needs to be done to look at the art of the possible there. And the linkages into Europe are key. France needs 15 gigawatts of interconnection. Where's it going to get it from? We have the 700 megawatt Celtic interconnector that we'll be hopefully announcing the signing of contracts. We'll be the first of many links, I think, between Ireland and France. And the West Coast, I think, is the biggest opportunity for this country in this 100 years.
Now, you're not, I presume, the guarantor of any kind of gas supply to the generators. No. Are you concerned, though, that the Norwegian gas has to come through the UK into Northern Ireland and down here for the generators?
I think, Pat, if we were having this conversation 3 months ago, the general state of concern right across Europe and the critical dependency on Russian gas was such that we were all contemplating a realistic scenario where there might be a shortage of gas. I think the situation stabilised hugely. The European response has been simply phenomenal in switching away from Russia. The Germans have done an extraordinary job. And I think the risk relating to unavailability of gas has reduced very, very significantly from where we were 3 or 4 months ago.
Now, the energy market has been the subject of some discussion in Europe. I mean, the idea that wind people who have built their plant, and then because the price of gas goes up, they get a huge whacking profit for their wind generation. And I had always thought, stupidly, I suppose, that if you've got a mixture of cheap wind and expensive gas, it brings the average price down. That's not the way the market works. The price of gas determines the price the wind generators get. So they make a fortune, and they're talking about obviously taking windfall profits from people like that. But it shows that the market is not really fit for purpose.
I would agree with that. I think it is wrong that a wind farm developer, I mean, I was one in my previous life, so I know an awful lot about this subject. I think it's wrong that super profits are being made, supernormal profits are being made on the back of high gas prices. I think the European Union and Ursula von der Leyen has finally, I think, given a lot of leadership on this and said the words that need to be said. The market needs to be reformed. There is no question about it. This is wrong. And Europe needs to take seriously the issue of market reform in this decade.
Yeah. So whatever your mix of, be it fossil and some...
If you've got a guaranteed price in a contract from the backed off by the government for energy as a wind farm operator...
That should be the price.
That should be the price. That should be the price.
A couple of other things. More EVs everywhere and encouraged to some degree anyway to buy EVs. Is the grid fit for purpose if we all have an EV in our driveway?
I believe so, because I think the EV problem is less of a peak demand problem, because the EV problem will be solved by smart technology. You'll plug your car in, you go to your app, and it'll charge it at the most sensible time.
Yeah. I don't want to wake up in the morning and find I'm dry. I think
intelligence will make that happen. It'll charge your car at the right time during the night when the wind is blowing or when the prices are lowest. And I think, I don't worry about EVs at all, Pat. I think they're going to be...
So the advice would be plug it in every night so you never are down to rock bottom and you will get some cheap electricity
Cheap electricity. I think that's... And people will come up with all sorts of smart... technology and apps that allow that to happen. I drive an EV myself. Yeah. I charge it at night. And all you want to know is that I've got my charge in the morning. You don't care when it happens.
Now, the other thing is selling back to the grid. And some of the retailers are advertising they'll buy back your power. Yeah.
In fairness to the government and the ministry, has announced now the tariff structure and the mechanism by which you can sell your energy back.
They buy back from me and then at a pittance and then sell it to maybe even back to me had a big markup. So I would have thought that if I give them 100 kilowatt hours and I'm using 200 kilowatt hours, my bill should be for the difference. But that's not the way it works. They pay me a pittance for the power I generate.
From some of the figures I've heard, Pat, and I'm not an expert in this, it's not as low as I might have thought.
It is low.
But the smart thing to do, Pat, is get a battery. Store your own energy and use it yourself. So then you're saving at the full market price.
Okay, the last thing, and again, it's outside anything you can do something about, and that is insulation of houses. Because as we've been hearing, generating heat for domestic living, for schools, for, you know, it's a huge devourer of energy. And if you could cut that down significantly, it would solve your problem.
Look, I think the government's retrofit program is very, very ambitious, but very sensible. I mean, as people say, the kilowatt you don't use is the greenest of all. And I think if there's one, you know, really interesting and positive to come out of this horrible situation we found ourselves in the last year is people's awareness about the value of energy. People, I think, lost the sense of appreciation and respect for energy. But now I think people are very much awakened. They're conscious of cost and they're also conscious of where did this come from? Is it green or is it high carbon?
All right. It's fascinating stuff. Mark Foley, Chief Executive of AirGrid. Thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.